So, can you hear me? Yes, loud and clear. So, ladies and gentlemen, good morning to all of you. From the part of Faculty of Education, it is my very great joy to welcome you all, researchers, teachers, Finnish and international doctoral and master's students, and also visitors from other faculties or universities to join this first Education Research Spring Colloquium titled Opportunities, Challenges and Future. The idea of organizing this kind of event came first from our smart and lovely postdoctoral researcher, Dr. Josephine Mote. I understood that at least one reason behind this idea was that in many appreciated universities around the world, these kind of faculty research days are very common and also popular events. Josephine's great idea was immediately shared by our wise, resourceful and inventing adjunct professor Elina Lehtomäki, who patiently, step by step, started to put into practice planning this spring colloquium. So all of us who are sharing and attending this interesting research event owe our gratitude to both of these ladies. Thank you, Josephine and Elina. Also, our vice dean, Professor Anna-Maija Poikkeus, has used a lot of her time in order to plan the program together with Elina. Thank you, Anna-Maija. The purpose of this 2 days research colloquium is to provide an opportunity for research and teaching staff and both international and Finnish doctoral and master students to listen and share research findings and ideas, to network and find out about projects being carried out in our university. I see that this kind of international colloquium that is held in our own university represents very nicely popular and also recommended home internationalization practice. Conferences and research seminars are essential events in research. Our researchers and teachers, as well as doctoral students, are very active in participating in national and international conferences, which is great. However, the fact that we visit and present our findings in many different conferences, and when back at home university, we are often very busy for struggling with daily administrative, teaching, and research duties, and for these reasons, have very seldom opportunities to listen and learn from each other's research. Sometimes it might even be that we know much better what is happening in our own field abroad than we know what is happening in the very next room. In the phase when our university, as well as other universities in Finland, are under heavy pressure to increase the impact of our research, to sharpen our profiles and strengthen the core fields, this kind of colloquium is extremely timely and important. I believe that research sessions like these are essential events for clarifying our core fields, building bridges between separate research teams and projects, and constructing step by step our shared vision of what the educational sciences at the University of Jyväskylä are today and what we want them to be in the future. Furthermore, I see that in order to meet the challenges of the brand new strategy of our university, particularly the aim to build stronger research groups, of special importance is that our national and international doctoral and master students are actively participating in this colloquium. In order to be strong and increase the impact of our research, we need all of us to work towards shared visions. I also very much rejoice that the program of this colloquium was planned in good cooperation with the Finnish Institute for Educational Research. The program for these 2 coming days, as you have noticed, is a heavy and impressive package of the latest research news from our various central fields of study. However, you may also have noticed that not all of our research areas are included in the program. 2 days is too short to cover all important topics, and in addition, there were some overlapping events which affected the final version of the program. I see that this only means that we need these kind of events also in the forthcoming years. It is easy and funny to imagine that somewhere in the future, a person who then acts as a dean or from some other position opens this spring colloquium and welcomes all to attend the 14th or 21st Educational Research Spring Colloquium. I sincerely hope that this event is starting a fine new tradition in the field of educational sciences in the University of Jyväskylä. So, with these words, I want to once again thank all the organizers and presenters and participants of this seminar and wish you all a rewarding and inspiring colloquium. Thank you. And our program continues with 2 important persons, Vice Dean Anna-Maja Poikkeus from Faculty of Education and Vice Director Päivi Tynjälä from Finnish Institute for Educational Research, and they introduce us to the educational research of our university. Floor is yours.
Does it work? A little bit? Good. So Päivi and I divide this time of sort of giving you a brief sort of outline what's happening in the Faculty of Education and also the Finnish Institute for Educational Research. I wanted to show this first, so to remind you that we still have 2 departments, Department of Education and Teacher Education, but we collaborate very much nowadays. It's a trend that we have already sort of started in a strong way, and I think it's going to be something that's very dynamic in the future when we move to the new building, that our fields and our researchers collaborate much more and find these common themes. I will show you some of the highlights, some of the strength areas. I picked this picture from the university slides. The first part shows, the top part shows those areas which the university feels that are important societal issues that we need to address in our research. And there are some others that we do not include in our research, but we do a lot of research in these areas, which is quality of childhood, well-being, prevention of risk and marginalization, and pedagogical use of information technology. And the pictures in the bottom half, they show some of the areas where we especially are working actively: processes of teaching, learning and guidance, learning environments in a broad way, all the how the environment should be developed and what kind of modern equipment and technology we can use, and professional development, all that that concerns identities, careers, and continuing education, and also the training phase. The strategy that we still have in force is a little bit old now. It was developed or planned in 2012, and it was drawn together with the Institute of Educational Research, so it shows that it has a sort of a broad scope. We are at the moment doing some planning for the new strategy, which would maybe show a little bit more concise a focus, maybe 3 areas, maybe 4 areas, a little bit broader areas, but I think that this still pretty well covers what we are doing research-wise. So we have a lot of people working in processes of learning, teaching and guidance, people working studying professional identities, career paths, competencies of the changing work life, the well-being participation context of growth of children and young people. That's a very big area too. And the fourth topic, special topics of learning and participation, could be named otherwise, but I think that we have even more increasing emphasis in that areas. And education of the future and societal change. And these sort of linking areas are also named as sort of key fields of research. And these especially are changing, they are dynamic. We know that we are actively searching for research funding, and big research fundings, they give us an opportunity to maybe strengthen some areas and focus on some new areas. This shows a little bit more in detail. I'll just take some highlights there. For instance, in the first area, the innovative technology-based learning environments, that has been an area where there's been a long tradition, but now I think there's even more sort of interest in sort of doing developments in schools or workplaces, using the technology in modern ways, learning ourselves and teaching our becoming teachers and students. Educational and pedagogical leadership is an area that's one focus. We have an institute specializing in those areas. I don't have a lot of examples from that area, but we hope that this is going to be also one of those expanding areas. I'll next show some little sort of examples of people's work. And I apologize already beforehand that not everybody is mentioned, or it's a sort of a sampling, and I know that there are many other groups also working in research actively. The well-being participation context of growth of children and young people, we have a lot of people doing very important work in the early years, daycare, and it's not only sort of looking at daycare, but looking at the children's well-being there, the social, emotional well-being, the very young children or the children who are closer to the school age, also links to family life, parenting, children's participation, narrative ways of research, looking at the environment of children in multiple ways, often using qualitative methods. Then on the areas of learning and participation, we have several large-scale projects of self-efficacy and learning disability interventions. Mikko will soon tell much more about that. We have the Procol intervention led by Hannu Savolainen and his colleagues, which is doing work in schools, having models developed to help schools to have sort of positive learning environments and positive climates in the schools. And then we have projects concerning special education, students with special needs, led by Raja Pirtima. So there's quite a diverse and versatile area there. And the area of professional identity and agency, led by Anneli Etelä-Pelto and Kaija Kolliin and Päivi Hökkä, Susanna Paloniemi, Katja Vähäsantanen, Sanna Herranen, they're doing a lot of work sort of outside the university, going to workplaces, for instance, the emergency units, and looking at ways to sort of promote teamwork, helping the people themselves in their work to sort of reflect their ways of work, their identities, their growth, what kind of growth they are now seeing in their work, what kind of changes challenge their agency. Mika Marttunen leads a group working on collaborative augmentation and writing, and Karita Kiili has been doing a lot of work in computer environments. We're looking for ways how young people use new media. There was just a news letter this morning in the paper of their work about how girls are more competent in some areas of finding relevant information from the net. So this kind of digital world is being studied also in our departments. In science and mathematics, this is mostly this group is from the teacher education, there are interests concerning the teaching and learning in the classrooms, observing other classrooms, but also looking at the ways to improve this kind of inquiry-based learning, helping our student teachers to learn more dialogical ways of teaching, and also looking at learners' representations, beliefs. And there's a lot of comparative studies in this area led by Jouni Viiri and his group. Then we have a learning development study called The First Steps and people around that, where we have been following children from preschool to now they are eighth graders, and looking at the paths of learning and development and the factors in the environment that affect the learning paths, and possibly if there are some risks, what would be the compensating factors, what are the environmental strengths that would help children compensate the risks. We also have teacher interventions going on, and we're working together with in an EU project on the quality of early childhood education, looking at the curriculum and making classroom observations and videotapings and doing comparative analysis of them. And then we have some longitudinal studies also concerning risks for reading disability by Minna Torppa, for instance. We have a lot of study in or research in professional development, looking at the phase where the teachers are sort of going to the field or when they are already in their practice, what kind of goals they have, what kind of ages, experiences they have. Some of our researchers are especially interested in language learning or language teaching, and we have also a program which uses this kind of language language content, combining language studies and content, which gives the students already competencies in their studies to use language as one medium. And then we have a group called the Critical Integrative Teacher Education, who are studying teaching of our students, like what kind of curriculum and what kind of practices would help us to develop autonomous, critical, dynamic teachers who would have those skills to also change their work in many ways after they go to schools. And that's led by Pentti Moilanen. And then we have in the education of teacher education, we have people who are working on language studies or doing work in multicultural linguistic areas, looking at assessment practices. And it's also a broad interest in Finnish language as both a target and a medium of learning. It's led by Mirja Tarnanen. And Riikka Alanen works with second foreign language acquisition and teaching and is interested in language awareness questions, for instance. Then have people who are sort of interested in looking at the future school, what it should look like, what kind of environments, what kind of new teaching philosophies or teaching practices are needed to engage students more, to have this more interactive school. And there's a big group of our researchers working on these areas. Then we have some special areas like inclusive education studies. For instance, Timo Salovita is working on this area. And we have areas like physical education, music education. There's a, sort of many sort of pedagogical interests in the content areas of school subjects as well. And lastly, I mentioned a topic where Helena is going to give a little bit more insight about the interaction and e-education. We have been involved with this university level project, which has been already going on for 5 years, where we try to involve the whole community in the university in sort of pedagogical development, helping the teachers in their departments and their units to sort of get some sharing of with colleagues about pedagogical questions and help to gain some insight about their own ways of teaching and interacting with their students to sort of create a more dialogical learning community. Thank you. And baby's turn. I'll take this away.
Okay, good morning everybody. My name is Päivi Tyynjälä and I work as a professor and vice director at the Finnish Institute for Educational Research. And I am going to briefly introduce you our institute, and later on today you will hear some other presentations which present some of our studies in more detail. And right now our institute is located in the Opinkivi building, but in the autumn we will move together with the Faculty of Education to that wonderful new Rose Garden building, Ruusupuisto. Our institute is not a typical university department. It's not part of the Faculty of Education. It is a separate research institute, and so far we don't know, maybe in the future we will join, but anyway, right now we are a separate research institute, and we are not only as a unit at the university, but we are also a national research, educational research institute. The institute was established in 1968, when the Finnish comprehensive education system was very new. And Finnish government wanted to develop our education system on the basis of educational research. And that's why they wanted to establish a research, educational research institute, and not in the Ministry of Education, but at the university. And because the University of Jyväskylä was already at that time very strong in educational research, the University of Jyväskylä was selected to a place to establish this national research institute. And we are not only educational research institute, but we are also multidisciplinary research institute. Some of our studies are multidisciplinary in nature, and our researchers are not only educational researchers. Many of them come from social sciences, psychology, natural sciences, philosophy. Yeah, I think maybe from all faculties of our university. Almost all, not all. Our mission is to develop educational system through scientific research. So the research that we are conducting is not only only basic research, but it's also very much applied research and research and development. So we have very big projects which are funded outside the university, and the purpose of this project is to use the information for the development of the education system. And from early childhood education or basic education towards the adult education, higher education, vocational education, adult education, in-service learning and lifelong learning, all of these are included. And you know that university has three main tasks, research, teaching, and so-called third task. And this third task, in fact, it is not a task itself. It is more a principle how these two tasks, research and teaching, should be carried out in the university. And this principle is that research and teaching should be carried out in collaboration with the surrounding society. And in our institute, this third task is very strong. So we have most of our research is related to and in, is carried out with in collaboration with schools and other educational institutes and educational administration and Ministry of Education and so on. And we do have some teaching. Some of our researchers are also teaching at the university, but that's the minor task of our institute. So we are a research institute. And very recently, last year, at the end of last year, we have updated our research strategy. And in this research strategy, we defined our main research areas. We used to have four research areas, but now we have three. And the first one of these is called learning, teaching, and learning environments. This is research that concerns learning processes in general. Then the other main research area is called education and work life. And this research area includes research that is conducted at the interface between education system and the world of work. So there are research studies which relate to collaboration and relationships between education and work. And for example, internships and so on, and how to develop working life skills in education. And the third large research area is focused on education systems and society. And this research is mostly based on a social scientific approach. While in these other areas, learning, teaching, and learning environments, it's more pedagogical research. So you can see that the widest circle is describes a social scientific approach, and the core is studies of learning processes. And if you look at our website, you don't see these research areas yet. There are still the four old research areas, because this is very, very new strategy, and we are only now reconstructing our website. So it may take some weeks when they are updated. And in these three main research areas, we have research teams, and the teams are described in this figure. And in these teams, some 5 to 10 researchers work together with the same topic. And as you can see, many of these teams are working not only in one research area, but these kind of overlap these research areas in the work of research teams. And the researchers belong at least to one research team, but many of our researchers may belong to several research teams. So they are not exclusive, but the idea is that this is kind of a fluent structure, and teams, people can establish new teams when they start new interesting studies, or they can join other teams, and teams can also collaborate. But the idea is that that people work in teams. They are not working alone, but they are all are working in teams with some other people. So collaborative research is something that we are aiming with this kind of structure. And unfortunately, I don't have pictures of our researchers. That was very nice. So I only have these titles of these research teams. So if you look at them carefully, you can see that they are very similar. Some of them are very similar with the research project at the Faculty of Education. For example, I belong to a team called Teacher Development, where we are investigating teachers' professional development, and Hannu Heikkinen will later today tell you more about these studies. And then there is something that you don't find in the studies of Faculty of Education, and those are the studies called International Assessment Studies. And this team carries out very big international assessment project where education system is evaluated through these international studies. And I'm sure that all of you have heard about at least about PISA studies, which is the program for international student achievement. Or at assessment, I don't remember. anyway, that study is carried out in our institute, but it is not the only big international studies. There are other, like for example, TALIS. TALIS is Teaching and Learning International Studies, and that was related to teachers' professional development and how it is organized in different countries, and it was just completed. And there is no, not anymore, the acronym of AHELO. It was a study of assessment of higher education learning outcomes. In fact, it was a feasibility study where the idea was that they want to examine whether it is possible to compare learning outcomes in higher education level at the similar way as in comprehensive education in PISA studies. And right now OECD, which is organizing these big studies, considering continuing this higher education learning outcome studies, but it is not yet established right now. Then we have studies of technology-enhanced learning environments, which has very much collaboration with the Faculty of Education, as you heard. We have studies on adult learning processes, lifelong guidance, working life, learning and education, higher education studies, social equality and immigration studies, studies on academic work, studies on economy of education. This is a very new area of research in our institute, economy of education, and it is carried out in close collaboration what is Kauppakorkeakoulu in English? School of Economics. Business. Jyväskylä University Business School. And there is a professor who is working in collaboration with our institute and another researcher. So they have only two researchers in this area, and it's just an emerging field. I think I think I stop here, but if you have any questions, I would be very glad to ask your questions and discuss more about this research. So I would like to have any comments or questions. Or do you have a... Yeah. We have here many foreign students, and I would like to ask, do you have in your own countries a research institute like this, a national research institute of educational research?
I think if we have, we don't realize it.
Ah.
Mm. Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah. It's not so much in public. No. Yeah. From which?
Something that is related to university. We know that the university should do some research, but we don't know how they make this or at which level they work on this.
Mm.
Where are you from?
From
Italy.
From Italy. Okay.
I'm from Bangladesh, and in my country we don't have like only the research institute like this. We have Institute of Education and Research. It offers teachers education, and along with this teaching, they also have carried out research, different kind of research on education.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So thank you very much. Yes, and I know that in some countries there are these kind of institutes, but they are very often located at the university, not university, but the Ministry of Education. So they are more administrative. But in Finland we have a different approach. We want to have it very much science-based, not based on administrative or political interests. Any questions? Or comments, or
questions can be accepted in Finnish as well.
Okay,
don't you think?
Of course. And
then we can
okay,
translate
and later as well. Yeah. Okay.
I come from the University of Barcelona. I think we exchanged some emails a long time ago.
Ah.
My name is Laia Arias. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I think like the other places that they mentioned that it's the research is basically made in the universities. And for example, in the case of the faculty, well, in the University of Barcelona, previously you had the and the Faculty of Education, and inside within the Faculty of Education you had Faculty of Pedagogy, Faculty of Social Work, Faculty and different kind of things. Mm. And usually now they are trying to put everything together and make the Faculty of Education, so the teacher training also goes with pedagogy and so on. And yeah, depending on the department you are in, you have a specific kind of research and so on. But sometimes I've also heard that depending on the research you are in, the funding that you receive for that really has an impact on how you have to work in that research. So I don't know how it's here, but in Barcelona I have the impression that depending who is paying for your research, you have to do a specific kind of research or another one, and maybe you don't have that much freedom for
mm. Mm. Yes, of course it is true that who is paying research has something to say. At least they want to say what kind of research is done. They have something in mind when they fund research. But at least in our university and in our institute, we don't have had any problems of that, because at least in our country, we have freedom of science, and they are not expecting certain outcomes, for example, or something like that. And we are free to plan our research on the basis of scientific principles and so on. So I don't see any problems here, at least. Okay. I think this is all. Thank you for your attention and questions.
Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to tell something about our developing project in our university, and I'll do it very shortly because there is only some couple of minutes time. And I'm a vice rector in our university and leading this project. I have, of course, there are many colleagues. Päivikki Jääskelä is a researcher, and Ulla Klemola is here as a pedagogical coordinator. My professorship is here in the Department of Teacher Education, so I think that I still belong to this community. Why to do this? I think that there are really many challenges for making better to promote the quality of higher education. There are changes in the society. Everyone knows that there are new skills we have to acquire during our studies. Also, the future needs are very clear, and we already know that the present generation, you have many skills related to mobile and technology, and we should somehow take into account it when we have our studies or education lessons in our university. Also, learning theories say that we have to make things differently in order to have a deep learning, deep understanding concerning and relating to topics. Subject knowledge is very important. And that's why we try to have active students with skills that they will manage with the future society and to solve those problems we will have. We don't know what they will be. So we think that these skills are very important to learn during studies. We have already research relating to pedagogical solutions that utilize modern technology in our university. For example, Päivi Häkkinen is very well known in that field. And we try to develop new practices and to find ways to support our teachers to make the teaching more modern. Also based on our strategy of the University of Jyväskylä, we have said there that we want to have teaching that's more interactive, that's more in high level, and that's why also the rector gives some strategic funding to do that. I'm not sure if we could use that design research here, but I think that we are all the time, this is in progress, and we are trying to find how to develop it, to develop these projects during when we are doing it. And the topic is changing. This is the fourth cycle. First we had, the topic was, or theme was interaction or interactive teaching. And just now we have the second circle that's it's focused on e-education. And last year we had that amount of students. I think it's really big amount. However, although we have just we have selected only about 10 projects there. We try to do this on many levels. We start from the, or we try to develop teaching that way that teachers themselves are, that this everything is tailored to their everyday work. Or we try to do this not from top down, but we hope that teachers do it from how they wish or how they see is the best way to teach. And that's why we have there the core, I should need some light in order to, but okay, it's okay. You see there these layers. We think that these teacher groups or groups that are doing they developing projects, they come from different departments, from different faculties. There are, for example, pure chemistry teacher education, physics, philosophy, music, and so on. So we have very it's that way representative that that these teachers are coming from different departments, and we have them in the very in the group where we try to give stimuli, different kind of professional lectures and guidance, and it is, as I said, very tightly tailored to their needs. But then we have also here these public seminars or public lectures, and we try to see that this what's happened here in the very, very, very near in the groups, in the departments, we want to share these experiences widely to the university level too. And that way we have these meetings about five times per year. Those groups, those small groups are they meet almost every month. And then we have here some steering group, and then this pedagogical coordination, as I mentioned already, and research and guidance group as a guidance group or it's a official steering group is our Council of Education. So this is the very complicated picture about how we try to work in our university in order to change our culture of teaching. And everyone knows that it's a very big task. It takes time. But I think, or I'm very optimistic because our teachers are so enthusiastic. And then shortly these research questions, we try to find out how teachers what are the experiences of the teachers when we are doing this research project, and what's somehow the extra value of using ICT in teaching and in learning environments. Päivikki Jääskelä has interviewed teachers, and we have also some questionnaires for students, and we try to, or we have developed the questionnaire on agency, and just now I'll tell you some very, very, very preliminary results concerning these teacher interviews here. So, we are very happy to hear that teachers value this way of developing teaching, that it's coming bottom up, and they feel that it's easier to tailor or it's easier to develop teaching when they receive support and when it's coming from or based on their own initiatives. Some teachers, in our university we have this ICT services group, and many of our teachers hoped that it would be a little bit more active in giving help somehow to meet the teachers' needs. And then some of them hope to have mentoring and a kind of forum for sharing these experiences on the use of ICT. And just now we have Yammer. We have started to use it. Also, we are very... Everyone knows that changing teaching from the traditional teaching practices towards more modern or how to take new technology and not only think that it's videos, but it's much more, there are much more potential. So it takes time. And it requires allocation of time for planning and designing. Also, our preliminary results tell us that teachers found that technology, it helps teachers to monitor students' learning processes very well. It's easier to give, to offer proper guidance then, and students, they receive possibilities to make self-assessment. And I think that it's one goal of our teaching in the university. It changed this teaching that way, that also there were more small groups, and so students, they received more peer support, also discussions in the groups, and I think that teachers are right that then they also, teachers have more, many more possibilities to give feedback during this learning process, not only there in the end. But it makes us, it gives us some demands to think about how we assess learning. We have to evaluate, maybe evaluate differently. Only some examination in the end. Maybe it's not the way we should do that. So it, we have to continue and do things maybe much more differently than today. Also, teachers found that many students are very eager to learn when they have new mobile, new technology, and it's much more flexible also this way. And in these small groups, when students are working in collaboration, they share their ideas, they learn from each other. Students also take much more responsibility on their own learning. I think that teachers in traditional teaching situations take responsibility on students' learning. Maybe they need not to stop that kind of thinking, but mostly I think that students had to take that responsibility and to follow their learning and to they need to work that way, that they have some call for or learning and be active in order to meet these goals. And then maybe I could, this moment when the research is in progress, to say that teachers need support and they need to have encouragement in order to do things differently. Also, teachers say that it's very important in the department to receive support from the leaders, the head, from the administration. And I'm very happy to see that our teachers, they are very eager to develop their teaching. They see that it's very valuable and it's very rewarding when they see that also students are very eager to work and to learn new things. But developing is very time-consuming. It requires long-term support. It needs from everyone. It needs to change our history that way, that we have expectations relating to these kind of situations, and that's why it needs to have enthusiasm in order to believe on those ideas teachers have or we see that we should follow. But further studies are needed in order to know more about these prerequisites of developing innovative learning environments. If we use these ICT more innovative ways. Because I think that many times we think that taking new technology means that students are maybe in their apartments, they need not to come to the campus. But I think that it's differently. Maybe we have more material there in the networks, in the mobiles, and we have more time to discuss, to have negotiations, to think about things together, face to face. I believe this moment that these new modern learning environments have potential that we don't yet understand. But I hope that we are doing this work also next year in order to receive enough experiences, and we might know more about those structures that the university needs or university teachers need in order to continue and to find these new ways to teach. My vision is to have this university collaborative community of learners where also teachers are learning every day. Thank you.
We may allow one or two questions.
Thank you. Is it on?
Yes, yeah. It's on.
Okay. So thank you for the very interesting presentation. But I'm very interested to know if OR means the students, also the students who have got special needs or some different needs. So. Mm-hmm. Is the platform, the ICT, is it easy access principle structure or built? So are you assessing these kind of issues?
Thank you. It's very important questions. I know, or I'm also the leader of the project of student life or student life concept that the university has been developed for years. And there we have, especially this year and next year, a new project. I can't remember that name, but it means that better access to everyone. Maybe I could say that so concretely, and that means that we try to find in our university ways to have all in we all have the same kind of possibilities to learn and to study, and it means that also we have been talking about that maybe this ICT may give some special ways to help, and I hope so. But I can't tell more this moment because it's just now in the starting point. Thank you.
So good morning, everyone. My name is Mikko Aro, and I work as a professor at the Department of as a professor of special education at the Department of Education. I have currently two ongoing research projects. The latter one started last autumn on the topic of comorbidity of reading and arithmetic fluency problems. But what I'm going to talk to you about today is this older project titled Self-Efficacy and Learning Disability Interventions that is about to finish at the end of this year, actually. And the research group of this CELDI project, it's a consortium project, so we have people working at the Department of Education, and we have also people working at the Nilamaki Institute, which is the consortium partner in this project. And although you see quite respectable list of people, we have 1.7 persons working on the project. So most of the people are working overtime or, well, some even in their spare time, actually. The central concept in our study of project is self-efficacy, which stems from Albert Bandura's theory of social learning. And self-efficacy refers to domain, context, and task-specific beliefs that we have about our ability to perform in a given task or situation. So basically, it relates to trust in one's skills and also includes predictions of failure or success in certain tasks or specific tasks. And to summarize the idea of Bandura, you can say that strong self-efficacy or slightly over-positive self-efficacy actually supports effort and persistence in challenging tasks and situations. But one has to also remember that overly strong self-efficacy can lead to lack of practice and effort. So basically, you can say that it's slightly overconfident in your skills. It's a good thing also in learning. As Bandura has said, he states that our level of motivation and affective states and our actions are based more on what we believe than what is actually objectively true about our skills. When you look at the learning disability studies and the role of self-efficacy in this issue, you can say that we know that motivational and affective factors are known to be related to learning and also to learning disabilities. Via, for example, the concept of self-efficacy beliefs or things like math anxiety. And you can there are actually quite few studies about self-efficacy and learning disabilities in younger group of children. Most of the studies relate to youngsters or young adults or adults. And it seems that learning disabilities seem to be associated either to weak self-efficacy beliefs or largely miscalibrated self-efficacy beliefs. So the study showing that learning disabled youngsters or young adults can be sort of overly positive about their skills. And you can also say that there seems to be a tendency that learning disabled children and adults tend to see the skills as static and unchangeable, which is, of course, not a very good thing from the point of view of learning or instruction or teaching. When you look at the learning disability intervention studies, you can say that they have traditionally or mostly focused on either practicing the compromised skill or practicing the presumed sort of cognitive background skills. There's very little intervention work that would be related to these motivational and affective aspects of learning disabilities. And you can also say that it seems that there's a quite large group of learning disabled children, for example, that do not seem to benefit on skill practice. Even though, for example, phonological awareness training has been shown to be generally really effective in preventing and also remediating the early reading problems, there's always a group of children that do not seem to be benefiting from the practice. And in general, you can say that practicing the cognitive skills as such seems to have quite poor transfer to reading and math skills, to put the findings somewhat violently in a nutshell. And if you want to, our idea of the relation between self-efficacy and learning disabilities, sort of based on the finding that it seems that explicit instruction in learning the basic skills of math and especially reading seem to be most relevant at the very early stages of skill acquisition, when you're practicing the sort of decoding and how to use the grapheme-phoneme correspondences or phoneme blending in getting the pronunciation of words. But when you move into the stage of development where fluency is the most, well, the development challenge is actually to become more fluent in the skill of reading or math. It seems that that is the fluency development is guided mostly by the amount of practice you get outside, actually outside of the school setting. And for example, David Sher has postulated this self-teaching hypothesis of reading, which basically says that by independent reading practice, you get you encounter new word items and you get repetitions of familiar words, and you become more automatized and more fluent by this practice. So that's actually the point where we think that self-efficacy becomes relevant. To give some kind of idea of the proposed relation between self-efficacy and the outcome in learning, you can say that when you have a low self-efficacy, it usually means that you also predict a failure in the tasks. And when you predict that you fail in a task, you tend to be avoiding the tasks in general. You might give up easily when you encounter difficulties or challenging tasks. You're not very initiative in these kinds of learning situations, and you might be prone to distractions, and you might set low level goals in your learning, which means that you need a lot of external support in managing the tasks and learning, and you tend to underperform. And also, it might mean that you don't like the learning-related task or learning situations, and you might be you might have tension and become anxious about learning situations that you have low self-efficacy beliefs in. On the other hand, when you have high self-efficacy beliefs or positive self-efficacy beliefs, you predict success when you encounter tasks. You might consider tasks as challenges. You can put a lot of effort and persistence in even in demanding situations and tasks. You're more active in learning situations. You have better focus in tasks, and you set more ambitious goals. And typically, you also tend to like the things that you have high self-efficacy in. And the focus is typically on the outcome of the process, not the performance as such. So the main aims of our project was to fill the gaps of knowledge with regard to self-efficacy beliefs of young school-age children. And with this young age, I mean children in the primary school. In our study, we had children from grade levels 2 to 5. We were also interested to see the interplay between the acquisition of the literacy math skills, especially the fluency level of the skills, and self-efficacy beliefs. And we also wanted to assess whether it's possible to support the development of positive and realistic self-beliefs in learning disabled children. So in our project, we had actually a number of sub-studies, but you can say that we had quite large-scale follow-up of several cohorts of children around Jyväskylä. We had altogether 1,200 children at grade levels 2 to 5 that we followed up for a year, and during the year we had 4 assessment points. I'll be talking a bit later, showing you the areas of assessment we had, but it was quite extensive follow-up, actually, also to carry out. Then we had 12-week interventions for selected subgroups of children with either poor reading fluency, poor calculation fluency, or attentional problems. And the design was quasi-experimental in this intervention study, so it means that we had experimental group and control intervention groups. And each group consisted of something like 30 to 40 children. So altogether we had close to 80 children performing at the low level in each domain we included. And I won't go into the details of the design, but basically, as you can see here, we had interventions for both the experimental group and the control group. Both groups practiced the compromised skill, but the experimental group, on top of that, had input that was supposed to support the self-efficacy during the practice. And the control group practiced only the domain, and compromised domain in a quite traditional means. And it was 12-week period of intervention, and we had baseline assessment 6 weeks prior to interventions, and pre-assessment before the intervention started. Then we had post-assessment after the three-month intervention period, and we had a follow-up assessment next spring. And the 1,200 children actually consist of the classmates of the children that were selected for the interventions. And they had the same assessment procedure, but no intervention. So they participated in regular instruction during the intervention period. The skill-specific practice that both the experimental control groups had was we used in reading, we used two computer tools, Graphogame that's developed in Jyväskylä, and Accelerate, which is a program we had access from Haifa University, Israel. Arithmetic fluency training was based on Selkis intervention program that is developed by my colleague Koponen at Niilomäki Institute here in Jyväskylä. It's a strategy-based program for supporting addition strategies. And ADHD intervention was based on multi-program that's being developed by Mika Paananen and his colleagues at Niilomäki Institute here in Jyväskylä. The target was behavior regulation, metacognition, executive functions. And self-efficacy support was we had slightly various ways of implementing that. In reading, we had an extra meeting once a week for a small group of children. The control group had an extra meeting with the skill practice. So the time for the intervention was similar. In math, the self-efficacy content was sort of built in a specified version of the Selkis program. And in ADHD, or this multi-ADHD children, we had a bit different design, so that we had the control group was the group waiting for the intervention, so there was no intervention control group in that set design. Interventions were carried out by special education teachers within the normal school hours, so it was kind of part-time special education for the children, and we had the intervention delivered in small groups of children. So the basic idea was that the Bandura states that there are four sources of self-efficacy development. Mastery experiences, vicarious experiences, which means that you observe your peers to learn and develop. And third one is verbal persuasions, and fourth is the interpretation of physiological and emotional states. So those four areas we wanted to sort of include in this self-efficacy part that was added on the traditional training of the compromised skill. And our idea is that if you affect self-efficacy, you might create changes in the effort and persistence and motivation in these children, which would mean that the children have different attitudes towards the domain they struggle with, and they might be more sort of willing to practice, for example, reading outside the school setting. And that would create some improvement in academic performance, or performance in these compromised skills. We had quite many areas of assessment. I won't go into the specifics, but the main focus was on the development of reading skills and arithmetic skills. And also, we had a quite extensive questionnaire of self-efficacy beliefs, and also developed a questionnaire of the sources of self-efficacy. But we also assessed things like math anxiety, motivation, attention, behavioral strategies, emotional behavioral strengths of the children, global and academic self-concept and self-concept as a learner, and especially for the intervention children and the control children, cognitive functions like memory, phonological processing, rapid naming, and IQ estimate. And the data collection for the follow-up was finished last spring, so we have been busy putting the data in, digitizing it. It's about to be finished quite soon. For the intervention, we had to collect a few extra groups from a different cohort. So these extra interventions are about to end this spring. So after that, we can have a look at the intervention data also. But at present, I'm able to show you some very brutal glimpses of first preliminary results related to self-efficacy and math anxiety. Currently, we have been analyzing the actually the cross-sectional data from the first assessment point, and we have I think 5 manuscripts in the progress, and the first ones are about to be submitted. And the first ones are actually related to the structure of self-efficacy beliefs in young children, and also the math anxiety of young children, and the relation between math anxiety and school performance in math. So basically, this is what Pilvi has been busy with. Pilvi Peura, who is a doctoral student in our project, she has been interested in assessing or investigating whether the structure of self-efficacy that Bandura suggests, that self-efficacy is domain-specific, it's context-specific and task-specific, whether it's really the case even with children at the age of, second grade to grade 5. And this structural equation model actually shows that when we have 4 different levels of sort of self-efficacy beliefs that we assess with these children, some related to reading a specific text, and some related to their confidence in using reading in daily reading activities, some related to more general level, like their confidence in being able to learn to read fluently, and some related to more issues of self-efficacy for self-regulated learning, like the children's confidence to sort of manage to do homework, reading-related homeworks, even when they feel boring, and things like that. So this figure shows actually that these levels are highly correlated, but they are distinguishable already at that age. And the model seems to be invariant between boys and girls, and also between different grade levels. So you can say that already at the grade 2, the children have quite specified and context-specific beliefs in their sort of reading skills, which is a new finding because this hasn't been studied in young children previously. And another model that relates to math anxiety, which is from the paper Riikka Sorva has been writing, or is actually writing at present, it relates to math anxiety. And what Riikka was interested in was to find out whether you have different dimensions in math anxiety. And the hypothesis was that you have this cognitive component that relates more to worry about math results and math performance, and the other component relates more to emotional aspects of math anxiety, like having tension when you do math tasks and being sort of emotionally anxious about math and doing math. And these two components seem to be present already at early age and separable in this math anxiety. And when you look at their relation to achievement, you can say that it's especially this emotional aspect of anxiety that's related to achievement, and especially to low achievement. There are quite many children who worry about their performance in math, even though they perform quite highly. So it's kind of like a sort of nerd type worrying about being good at math. But especially when you have the anxious math anxiety that manifests sort of in an emotional level, that seems to be negatively linked to math achievement. And I hope there's more to come in next colloquiums also from this project. But I now thank you for your attention.
Questions? Comments? I think at this moment... wait until the next colloquium. Oh, over there, yes.
Is much more of a comment.
I really like the this theoretical framework by Panjura, the self-efficacy. That it has much to do with the kind of self-efficacy that one possesses, whether you possess low self-efficacy. Even when I related to the previous presentation on teacher development, most teachers have a low self-efficacy towards the use of ICTs. You know, they feel it's something really that it's not that doable or that achievable, and also still on that, more especially coming from a perspective where in the kind of the system that we use, the education system is too centralized. Most decisions are top-down. That is, they are not bottom-up like what the presentation was. You find that most of the education initiatives, teachers are not involved, and as such, They end up having this low self-efficacy to think that this can work for them. So it's really very igniting for me to realize how the whole theory influences behavior and achievement. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
No more comments. Next comments will come either by email or we learn in the next colloquium more. Thank you, presenters, today, and thank you for the comments and questions. Please do forward participation list so that take care that everybody has his or her name. Take care that you got your name in the participation lists. Where are they now? Over there. Found. Yes. And then we'll have a short break. We'll have a 15 minutes break. Meet here again at 11 o'clock and continue the exciting day. Thank you.